come down and threaten us.
Is the singularity near?
The military-industrial complex.
The truth is out there.
The seven mountains of the influencers of culture.
To be as gods, you know, catapults to propaganda.
From a mostly secure, undisclosed, split-level location on a cul-de-sac somewhere in the heartland of America, this is A View from the Bunker. Now, here's Derek Gilbert.
You may be allowing people into your daughter's bedroom that you would not let set foot inside your front door. Welcome to A View from the Bunker. I'm Derek Gilbert. Our guest retired after a long career in international marketing, where she accumulated over 3 million frequent flyer miles, but she may be doing the best work of her life now. She is the CEO and president of Million Kids, online at millionkids.org. She's a board member and director of development for Rafa House International, which creates vocational programs for at-risk and trafficked girls in Southeast Asia. She's also the author of the book Seduced, The Grooming of America's Teenagers, and it is our honor to welcome Opal Singleton to the program. Opal, to give people a sense of what Million Kids, why the organization is named Million Kids, what is the story behind that name?
Well, it's called A Million Kids because more than a million kids are trafficked each year throughout the world. In fact, it's more like 1.6 million kids. And we got started with that name because we wanted to bring attention to the issue. And that is globally. In the U.S., we believe the number, Department of Justice estimates the number to be somewhere between 300 and 400,000. I personally believe that number isn't a solid number because I work in the business and we're seeing a tremendous escalation in the number of victims, even if they're not trafficked, the number of victims being exploited because of the internet and the easy access to young people.
Mm-hmm. Is the internet the principal means of contact for these children? Where do these million plus children come from who wind up being, and by trafficked, I presume you mean that these are pulled into what sort of lifestyle? I mean, let me back up just a step. When you say trafficked, what does that all entail?
Well, there's various ways. We're basically talking about child exploitation here, and it has various ways that kids are exploited. It can be something as simple, and it isn't. That doesn't mean that we're going to minimize it in any way, but something as simple as being sextorted. By that, I mean someone will lure a young person into sending off a naked photo. Maybe they send their own naked photo or somebody else is pretending to be them. And you'll send it back, and the next thing you know, you're being blackmailed and extorted. And that word is called sextortion. Sex and extortion married together is sextortion. Mm-hmm. So that's a kind of exploitation. And sometimes, in some cases, what will happen is they will sneak out and meet up with the individual that they meet online, and they'll end up being raped or violated and or even taken out of the area. I'll refer to a case on that before we're through talking because there's a new case like that today. But the true meaning of the word sex trafficking, it is a version of human trafficking, and what that basically means is that they are being used usually into prostitution. And the idea of sex trafficking must involve the words force, fraud, or coercion. And so what is happening here in the U.S. is it's really being driven by two things, maybe three things, gangs, and then social media, which provides that access and grooming capability, and then gangs using social media. So those are the main ways that a kid gets recruited. If they end up being trafficked, oftentimes what happens is they are put out and forced into a form of prostitution. And many times they're put in sex rings. Sometimes they're kept locally, but more often than not, they're transported around the United States and put into sex rings. Depending on the state that you're in, depends on the legal definition. In California, which is the state that I work mostly out of, if you're under 18, you are automatically a victim of sex trafficking if you are involved in commercial sexual exploitation, which you and I would normally refer to as prostitution. Hmm. However, if you're over 18 and you're into prostitution, you can also become a victim of sex trafficking and that would be if you have force, fraud, or coercion, meaning someone's holding you against your will, giving you a quota, threatening to kill your family, maybe threatening to beat you, holding you hostage, luring you in on the belief that you're going to be a model and make a lot of money, those kinds of things, then that is also sex trafficking. So it kind of has a broad legal definition, if you will. Now, I have a tendency to deal with all of those issues, even though not always does each case end up in true sex trafficking, which is the good news, you know. But, you know, I do deal with child exploitation. I also deal with child pornography, and we'll talk about how that affects each one as we talk here.
This is a bit shocking, I think, for many of us here in America. This is the kind of thing that we sort of expect to find rampant in places like Haiti or failed states like Iraq or Libya or places that are notorious for sex tourism like Thailand. But you're saying this is happening here in the United States, that children on the streets of the cities of the United States, over a million a year, are being forced into this.
Actually, here in the U.S., they are predicting somewhere between 300 and 400,000, but we also think those numbers are low as we're learning more and more about how all this is taking place. This is a relatively new phenomenon. I've been working with Cambodia in about late 2008, and I started here in the U.S. about late 2010. Quite frankly, I did not want to look at human trafficking here in the U.S. because it's somewhat political, because you're dealing with various law enforcement agencies. And on top of it, I guess I really didn't want to admit that it's happening. But today, I spend about 70 hours a week mostly working with the U.S. One of the things that I've learned, and I was the acting country director of one of the largest safe houses in Cambodia in 2012, and with Rapha House, R-A-P-H-A, Rapha House. And over there in Cambodia or a lot of those Southeast Asian countries, trafficking is based on poverty. But in the U.S., it's often based on wealth and being able to have access. And, you know, think about this. We are giving 9, 10, 11-year-old kids a smartphone.
Mm-hmm.
The FBI tells us that there are probably nearly more than a million predators online at any given time. We're really at a unique time in history, and this is what's really driving the whole thing. If you think about it, only in the last 2 to 3 years have we come to a point where we regularly give a young person access to the entire world, oftentimes before they go through puberty, and oftentimes before their frontal lobe is developed where they can make good cognitive decisions. And we do this based on the fact that they're good kids and everybody else is doing it. But this has never taken place before in history. And I talk to kids all the time. I've trained about 50,000 kids since I've been into this. And that is one of the keys to this, is educating yourself so you can educate others, which is why I wrote my book. But if you think about this generation, this is the first generation that has never not known the Internet. In other words, they were born with it. And, yes, their older brothers and sisters had it, but they didn't have devices 24/7.
Right.
And, you know, for instance, the statistics indicate that 87% of kids sleep with their phone. In fact, I would be willing to tell you that almost every adult in your audience carries their phone to the bathroom with them.
Yeah.
And I bet 20% have lost it in the toilet. Okay, and I'm one of them, by the way. But here's my point. We're all married to it, and that access is unique than any other time in history, because that allows total strangers to give input to your child for morality, sexuality, spirituality, gender choice, abortion, even ISIS. And that has never taken place before. And it's a little bit kind of like the old thing that we've heard about the frog in the boiling pot of water.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of creeped up on us. And, you know, we all want to be good parents. We want to be there and not be overbearing. By the same token, how do we handle this so that we raise strong moral, spiritual leaders? And I think that that's really, really the most important part of this discussion, is we must change our approach to parenting, because technology has changed the dynamics of the family, and it's changed the dynamics of how your child gets information and how they process information and the relationships they build. And so the idea of Seduced is to get parents to stop and think this out. And let's come up with positive, proactive ways to deal with this. Electronics aren't going away. Technology is not going to get simpler. So we must find Christian ways to deal with this to keep our kids safe.
This is something that hits close to home. You mentioned the omnipotence, the omnipresence of these devices. Our daughter's 25, going on 26. She got connected to the internet fairly early, but as you say, it's only been the last few years that they can carry these devices that are connected to the World Wide Web all the time. I guess there are a couple of questions that are in my mind here, and one of them is kind of an unnerving thought. I'd like to think that I've been a good dad, but I know that there are times in my daughter's life, and thinking back on my own life, there were periods of time when I thought my parents were the stupidest people in the world. Wonderful parents. I know now that they sacrificed an awful lot to try to raise me the right way, to process right from wrong correctly and on a biblical basis. But there was a period of my life where, like I said, I thought they were idiots, and I rejected all of that information. My daughter's at an age now where I'm beginning to get smart again. Why do parents seem, generation after generation, to make the mistake of assuming that because we're good people, you know, I know I'm teaching my daughter the right from wrong, and my wife is teaching her right from wrong, and so that she must be making the right decisions as well, while I know for a fact that when I was her age, I was sneaking around and doing things outside their vision, so I thought. But now, with the tools available to them, the access they have to the worst of human nature is right there in the palm of their hands. Why do we as parents keep making that mistake that this can't be happening to my kid? This is only happening in other houses.
Well, and I'm not so sure, and as you know, my book is written for parents and grandparents, although older kids read it. But I'm not so sure that I look at it as a mistake as much as we need to recalibrate what being a parent in a technology age means. Because think about this, by its very nature of parenting, when a child begins to go through puberty, the very normal thing for them to do is try out new stuff. We all did it, trust me. There isn't anybody in your audience that was pure, I guarantee you. And we all did. And that is the nature of puberty. You're starting to be independent, and you're pretty sure that your ideas are better, and you're going to try it out this or that or the other way. And, you know, that is the way it works, and it's always been a challenge for parenting. But if you add to that, not only the fact that you have a lot of technology now, we have something what I call the e-chasm. And maybe let me just kind of go off on a side trip here so you can see how I arrived at this point. I was training with a church. I do a lot of church conferences, by the way, where I come out and we do an all-day Saturday conference on this very subject. And I was doing one in Clovis, California. And for whatever reason, all the parents sat on one side and all the kids sat on the other. And I don't know if they weren't speaking. I don't know what their problem was, but they did. But I asked the parents, I said, what is your, you know, favorite technology? Well, it was Facebook and Instagram, and one was crushing candy, and one was playing Farmville. So I asked the kids, what are you on? And it was, you know, let me think. I remember them now. It was Tango, Tinder, Tumblr, Flickr, Uvu, Omegle, and Poof.
Right, right.
And it sounded like a foreign language to me. I'm thinking, what is this? But I looked at the audience, and I realized we have an e-chasm. And that changes the entire power of parenting, because on one side, we have a generation of kids now who have full control and full access out there. We are giving them devices that open the door to the entire world while they're going through puberty and before their frontal lobe develops. And we hope and pray this is going to work. On the other side, you have parents who are technophobic, and some are, quite frankly, techno-impotent. My editor said, can you say that? And I said, you bet, watch this, because they are. And so that puts all that advantage over to the kid. And this goes horribly wrong if we cannot get the attention of the parent and stop and say, you know, God, show me how to be a strong Christian parent and raise strong Christian leaders in a technology age, because I must resume the position of being the leader as a parent. And sometimes that means saying no, by the way. Mm-hmm. But where it really counts is to sit down with your child and have dialogue. Let me kind of go off on you here a little bit on a tangent. You know, you'll hand your son, and I'm not saying you did, but some people will hand their son video games because everybody's got them. And we'll talk about this in depth, but some of those video games are very violent and have a lot of animated pornography on it.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you saw your son looking at hardcore pornography somewhere, you would go, hey, son, we need to talk. But because it's on his cell phone or on his video game, and he's just doing it with a bunch of friends, you have a tendency to walk by and go, well, he's busy and we're happy, and they treat it as a babysitter. Yeah. In fact, this is the reason why I say in Cambodia, it's a crime based on poverty. In America, it's based on wealth, because we are handing our kids these devices and using them for babysitters on top of it.
Mm.
So the name of the game here is to get involved and learn this together and begin to position your child as being someone who you believe in, you understand, you trust, and you know that they've been raised with good moral values, but you want them to help you learn how all this works and decide together what it is that we think works for our family. And don't be afraid to say no. You would say no if you were seeing it in person, so let's take the veil off the technology. I want to take a second and share with you, because I often train with cases, let me share with you a case where this is very typical. In fact, I've seen this way too many times recently, but this was a case I was actually on NBC four months ago now on this case. But this guy had a 12-year-old daughter, and he had heard my talk at a church, I think he said, and bought my book, and he was watching his 12-year-old daughter. Good kid at 12, you know, going through puberty.
Mm-hmm.
And he realized that she was on Omegle and Kik, K-I-K.
Mm.
And those are the two sites where we lose the most kids. And so he was starting to really worry and beginning to extract it slowly from her. And at 2 in the morning, he heard her door shut, or her window shut. And he jumped up, and he went to her bedroom, and she was gone.
Mm.
And she had snuck out to meet the 16-year-old guy from San Diego that she had her newfound love on the Internet. Remember, you're 12, you're looking for love in all the wrong places.
Yeah,
she
yeah.
found it. And so, you know, he panicked. He got in his car. It's 2 in the morning out in a small town here in California. It's darker than heck. And he saw her getting in the car down the street. So he drove his car down there, and he's a real cowboy. He slammed on the brakes, pulled the driver out of the car, and just decked him out cold.
Sure. Well,
and,
I can understand that.
He was actually on Bill O'Reilly News. And then he called NBC, and they came out and interviewed me. But here's the point. His 12-year-old daughter had one leg in the car at 2 in the morning with
yeah.
a guy who's 27 years old and a registered sex offender.
Uh-oh.
And this all happened. And she's a good kid, absolutely a good kid, and he's a great guy. But this is a normal situation that we encounter. We have one today. I train with cases because I do a lot of training of law enforcement and social workers and code enforcement and people like that. There's one in the that came up today. 27. Well, the guy was I can't remember how old he was. I think he's 34. He got 27 years. He's from Florida, but he met a couple of girls on a video game, and it's called grooming. You build their confidence. These girls were from out here in California. He was from Florida. And they became friends through this video game, and pretty soon he got them to run away. And he actually flew them to Florida and was starting to put them into prostitution.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he ended up getting 27 years. But think about, these girls are 14 and 15. And, you know, what happens in grooming is that it looks like your new best friend. Usually it'll start with something like Yahoo Messenger or Kik, which is instant messaging. And they'll just send off something kind of cute and funny. and you respond. It's just something funny. Kids like funny. And so you say something funny, he says something. Pretty soon you're texting, you're tweeting, and you're maybe on Facebook or Instagram. You might on Pinterest. You might go over to YouTube, sharing some YouTube, and pretty soon you're playing video games together. And mom is saying to you, now don't talk to strangers on there, but they're not a stranger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're your friend. And that is literally how grooming takes place, is that the child does not realize, or even oftentimes adults, by the way, this also works for adults, for what it's worth.
Yeah, yeah.
And I address that in my book. People get into online affairs and they fall in love with, you know, an image. The big problem with this is on the internet, a guy can be a girl or vice versa, and you end up with a lot of exploitation.
Mm-hmm.
I'll share with you one more case. I happen to be very fortunate in the case came from a lead that I generated. I do a huge amount of training in schools, and I had two girls come forward after one of my trainings and show me their phone, and we replaced their phones but took them. And in this case, we had a guy out here in Hemet, California, who was 44, and he developed the image of a 19-year-old prostitute. And she would go on and on about how much fun it was. She was having sex anyway. Why not make some money? She just bought a car. She had all this money. And so you, too, can become a prostitute. More than 160 kids locally responded to her.
Oh, wow.
And before, we interviewed more than 160. We believe there's over 200 kids out there before it's over. But we interviewed 160. We were able to make cases on 120 of them. We were able to get 61 charges going. He's in jail, and he could be looking at life in prison. But what would happen is these kids would show up, which the girl who did not exist, this guy made a facade of a girl.
Mm-hmm.
The girl would say, well, let's see if you're prostitute material. And think about our society. We glamorize this, you know, pimp my ride, pimp daddy, pimp an old party.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know? And so it sounds cool and you're having sex anyway. Why not make a little money? And so what happened is at least 17 of them showed up. He had sex with them. The girl would say, I'm going to set you up with my best customer. You'll like him. He's great in bed. And so these girls would show up with the best customer, which was really the guy who was creating the facade.
Mm-hmm.
And he would have sex with them. And then when he was through, he would set them down and show them the video of the sex. And then began to destroy them and say, you will become a prostitute. And that's how they get lured in. You know, that is one of the ways they get lured in.
Wow. You know, the thing that strikes me about this, Opal, is that, you know, back in the day, in my childhood, growing up in the 60s and 70s, parents were accused of using the television set as the electronic babysitter. The big difference was that at the time, you had three, maybe four channels to choose from. And there were certain broadcast standards that certain things wouldn't be allowed into a home anyway, but mom and dad had control over what was on the television. They were gatekeepers between what was coming in from the outside world into the home. And now, 10 years ago, when I was broadcasting a daily talk show in Columbia, Missouri, talking to the head of the Mid-Missouri Internet Crimes Task Force, even then, there was not a month that went by that they didn't nail somebody in a small town in Missouri who was grooming a teenage girl and then meeting up with her for the purpose of having sex. They were trapping these guys and they were putting guys away on a regular basis. But 10 years ago, the internet wasn't everywhere like it is today. You still had to use a desktop computer in the home. So again, mom and dad still had the opportunity to be a gatekeeper, even though it was changing then. I remember when our daughter was younger, we had the computer out in the family room or in the kitchen where everybody could see what was being done on the computer. But not everybody was that way. Many children had them in their bedrooms. Now you've got laptops, you've got tablets, you've got cell phones, smart watches, everything connected to the internet, and you can take them wherever, whenever. As you say, it's an addiction, even for us grown-ups. Yes, I carry my phone with me almost 24/7. But it seems to me the biggest change, going back a generation or two, is that mom and dad are no longer the gatekeeper and going to have to overcome whatever obstacles there are. Let me ask this. What are the biggest obstacles to mom and dad, grandma, grandpa, becoming that gatekeeper again?
Well, number one, they need to alert themselves to the technology and learn it with their child and learn it in a positive manner so that it isn't a a force between you and your child. And that really is important. But one of the things I wanted to express after you just said this that I think is important is it's not only the fact that they're coming into this child, but the technology is advancing to a point where it's an ongoing relationship, oftentimes a relationship that becomes more important to the child than the relationship between the parent and the child.
Yeah.
And that is the reason why it's very important for parents to understand this and start early how you go about approaching this. For instance, most of what starts out here is on Kick because they'll get an instant message. But there is now something called live streaming and camming, which camming is basically you make pornography yourself in your bedroom and then sell it at the school, and you use bitcoins from online gaming to sell it and pay for it because kids have bitcoin accounts from their World of Warcraft account. And so what will happen there is that you begin to have not just access, but ongoing relationships where they are changing your child's self-image. And this, I want to take into a conversation about shame-based behavior, but first let me finish with, the concept of, you have these apps. Now we have something called live streaming, and I'm very concerned about it. I believe it's the way of the future. I believe it will replace Facebook as we know it. Mm-hmm. In fact, Facebook just announced it last week, and there was a technology called Periscope prior that is a competing technology that is done through Twitter.
Yeah.
But what happens in live streaming is your child takes their cell phone and they make this video and they blast it out around the world, and anybody then can begin to follow you. And, I would like to do that myself for a million kids in learning to train the world about human trafficking. But having said that, what if your 14-year-old girl wants to show off her belly button ring?
Mm-hmm.
Now, and she begins to blast this out. All of a sudden, she has 30,000 new followers, and she thinks she's hot.
Mm-hmm.
Except it's got geo-tracking right back to your house.
Right.
We tested this out. One of my volunteers from Austin, Texas, tested it out for me the other day. I live in Riverside, California. And so she went on it in Austin, and she looked for somebody in Riverside. And she found a 14-year-old girl giving a tour of her parents' house when they weren't home.
Oh.
And it geo-tracked right back to the address, And the kid, of course, it never occurred to them how much danger she's putting her own life into.
Yeah.
And her family's life, by the way. So on top of that, the next level of this is online gaming. And I really want to explore that before we're through. But I want parents to understand the impact of online gaming. Parents have a tendency to look at online gaming like they're taking their kid to a movie or it's just some other game. And there are many online games that aren't bad. As long as there are not chat rooms, it is how kids are going to learn. And it teaches hand-eye coordination, it teaches strategy and reaction, and it is the teaching mechanism of the future. But if you get a game that is called, they're called MMORPGs, Massive mm-hmm. Multiplayer Online Role-Playing Games, MMORPG. Anyway, these are like World of Warcraft, what's the big one? Minecraft. Now, not all Minecraft is bad. If Minecraft without a chat room can be okay, but Minecraft with a chat room is dangerous. And then Grand Theft Auto, which we'll end with. But the idea of a game is it isn't like going to a movie, even if it has sex and violence. If you go to a movie with sex and violence, you go home, you might talk to your child about it, you all saw it together, and you go home. But in a game, your child creates an avatar, and he gives it a name, or she gives it a name, by the way. And this is, by the way, how guys get violated. And guys are getting exploited in big numbers and heavily based on this gaming. I just got an FBI report today where there were 16 boys that was in that case that was violated. And so what happens is your child creates an avatar. This is a fictitious character that he names, and he begins to live vicariously through this person that he's created, this avatar. By the way, this happens to girls too.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a 14-year-old girl that was lost not too long ago through the game of Black Ops. And her father was a school counselor, so that's how I learned of it.
Mm.
But so what happened here is that that once you start to live vicariously through this avatar, your acceptance and rejection by the team out there that you're playing is based on how well your points are. So you buy it, you use Bitcoin, which is something you get by using your dad's credit card, and you get your guy some equipment, and then he begins to compete. And that means that whoever you're playing with, you need their approval. You're playing in a world that's highly violent, and interesting enough, many of them are based on the occult and sorcery.
Yes.
Now, how many parents would take their child out and submerge them into occult and sorcery purposely? But it's just a game, mm-hmm. so they do without thinking. And these games have a high amount of pornography on them. And it isn't just pornography. This is animated pornography that has no limit. And because it's animated, the person begins to believe that it's not harmful
mm-hmm.
because it isn't real. And so what will happen is we're seeing lots of kids that are 12, 13, 14 that are getting addicted to animated pornography.
Mm-hmm.
But we are mixing animated pornography in a world of violence. And then we open the door to total strangers. And that avatar, that child, needs the approval of those total strangers to succeed. And so they will rise and fall on the acceptance and rejection in that game of how well they're doing. When you talk about a grooming incubator, this is how, by the way, ISIS is going in there, because a lot of these chat rooms have people in it that you would never invite in your household.
Right.
But a lot of those chat rooms have sub-chat rooms where they have bestiality, they have S&M, they have ISIS, and like that.
Mm-hmm.
I know I'm talking a lot here. Bear with me a second. But there was a case back east of Chris Cornell. I think it was Ohio. And his mom and dad and grandpa were on TV going, not Chris. And he was picked up for having a pipe bomb he was going to blow up at Washington, D.C., a landmark, and for ISIS. And he's 20. And his mom and dad are going, not Chris. I mean, he doesn't have a violent bone in his body. And he's not political. We can't believe it. All he ever did was play video games 10 hours a day and play with his kitty. Well, it wasn't kitty. Didn't do it. And that what happens is that is how you get groomed in a big way, because you are spending hours with people who are influencing you while you need their approval, and you're competing for acceptance in that.
Mm. You mentioned something earlier, and I think this dovetails with what you've just been saying here. You mentioned that these games, this grooming process, this constant interfacing with the internet and with people that the children don't even know through these various social media. And I think it's interesting, by the way, that Facebook is already starting to send reminders to us like, hey, you did this 3 years ago. Do you want to post this again? They're trying to get us to post more content because they're seeing the amount of content drop off as kids figure out that mom, dad, grandma, grandpa have ruined Facebook for me. So I'm going to go somewhere else where they're not looking. But you mentioned that it's changing the way children process information. What do you mean by that?
Well, first of all, let me address, I keep thinking that Facebook is going away with kids because they go over to things like Twitter and Instagram and Pinterest and a bunch of the others. But quite frankly, the last three cases that I have seen here that are large style cases, all are still on Facebook.
Okay.
So I am still a little bit lost on that one. But how they process information is really quite an interesting thing. I want to share with you a situation with Grand Theft Auto, because this is why I wrote my book, by the way. I never thought I'd be an author. I'm not a trained author. I just wrote it as I talk. But that it is a 5-star book on Amazon, so I'm thrilled. Thank you, God. But I wrote this book because this kid made me mad about Grand Theft Auto, and I realized that parents everywhere need to understand this. What happens in these games is this year's game, Grand Theft Auto, is the biggest game. It sold over $1 billion worth in 3 days, and it's over $2 billion now. It cost $100 million just to make it, so this is not small.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Grand Theft Auto's never been a moral beacon. They've always had sex with prostitutes. They've always killed cops, and we've always accepted that. But this year's model is especially exciting to everyone. It has first-person software in it, so it's very real in the experience. And I just did trained 450 kids in an assembly one day with all the board of trustees watching. It was a riot. So I asked them, how many of you have this? You know, 375 out of, just a rough guess, out of 450 had it. So in this year's model, you pay real money to have sex with a prostitute. This is real money for virtual sex.
Wow.
$20 for this, $50 for that, and $70 for this. And you'll have to ask your kids what it is because every kid knows what that is. Anyway, so you pay real money on your credit card to have one of these virtual sex acts with a prostitute, and it's first-person experience. So when you're through, you kill her to get your money back.
Oh, lovely.
Because you can't lose those points.
Right.
So remember, this is the biggest game out there. So you think about how kids are thinking differently. So what happens here is I said to this kid, so how do you feel about that? And he goes, what do you mean? And I said, well, wait a minute. You just told me that, you know, you had sex with a prostitute. You paid real money for virtual sex, first person, and then you killed her, right? Don't you feel bad about that? No. He says, why? It's a game. It's what you got to do to win. Now, since then, I talked to some kids at the police department. I said, did you kill the cop? Oh, yeah. I backed up twice. I got him, he says.
Huh. You know?
And I said, but you're in the police station. You have two cops behind you. Don't you feel bad? No, it's just a game, he says. It's what you have to do to win. So I did the same thing at the school with 450 kids. Before we were through, 200 admitted to having one of the sex acts and killing her. So I said, well, how many of you feel bad about it? And there were two.
Hmm.
And I think this is really an important point for Christian parents. And I often have this discussion at churches and with youth groups, because what their kids are really telling me is that sex on the internet is not sex.
Yeah.
And that killing isn't killing. And what they're really telling me is that the decisions they make on the internet have no consequences because they're not real. But that is exactly how they get in trouble. In fact, these kids, some of these kids, I just did a survey at a large local church here, a high-end church in a very exclusive neighborhood, and out of 26 kids, six of them said that they did not believe that sin on the internet was sin. And this is the reason why I think I address the issue of parenting in a technical age. Because they want you to believe that because it's not real, it has no consequences. But I can tell you that every day I work with cases where these kids get lured in, sneak out, and they get violated. And their decisions have very real consequences.
Mm.
So this is the reason I wrote my book. I want people to understand this. I believe that it's probably a 4 or 5 year problem at this level, because we're going through a period where we have more older people that aren't as trained in technology. And as younger parents come up, they'll understand more of it because they were in that generation. But the kids that you're talking to today that are having sex with prostitutes and Grand Theft Auto will be having kids in 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, and we must address this, because sin on the internet, in my opinion, is still sin.
Well, exactly.
And, you know, go ahead.
No, exactly. Sorry. Because we serve a Lord who tells us that, you know, lusting after a woman who is not my spouse is adultery. It's not like adultery. It is adultery, whether it's a picture on the internet, image on television, or, you know, somebody I see on the street. It's not the physical act. It's what goes on in my heart. And what you're doing is conditioning a whole generation of children, young adults, to believe that, no, if you're seeing it on a screen, it's okay. Whether it's adultery, murder, stealing, whatever, it's all okay.
The idea. Go ahead, sorry. That goes along with the idea that you also have other people talking to you that, well, maybe you're not really a boy, or maybe you're gay, you know,
yeah.
You want to try it out.
Yeah.
You know, it's okay to get an abortion. You know, everybody will understand you didn't mean it. These are all conversations that take place outside the parent. And, I mean, we're out here in California, I always say it's the land of fruit and nuts. Anyway, out here in California, we have, you can edit that out if you want. Anyway, we have, you know, the right to get a sex change. Your child has the right to begin to get a sex change without talking to the parent. And, you know, that's happening across America.
Yeah.
And you're saying to yourself, well, where does this end? If sin is a sin on the internet and total strangers can then begin to convince your child that maybe they're not a boy, or maybe they're not a girl. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. Opal, this is very disturbing, but this is really important information. Again, as in the interest of keeping this to a manageable length, we'll begin to bring this home here. If you were to give just a couple of common sense, practical suggestions for parents who maybe haven't grasped the size or the scope of the problem that they face, right now, what are things that they can do today, tonight, as soon as they hear this program, to begin to get a handle on what's going on under their roof?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, the first thing I would suggest is buy the book, and you can do that at millionkids.org, not for the purpose of selling books, but to educate yourself so you understand the issue in depth. Number two is get involved. If your kid was going to play soccer, you would watch. But when your kid is on there playing a game, you're not. The other thing is set with your young person and say, you know, I pay for this phone, and so I want to know every app that's on there, but I don't want to just know what they are. I want you and I to go through them and understand what they're like and what happens, and has anybody ever used them to violate a person? I trust you, I believe in you, and I believe that you can be a leader, but I want you to teach me so that I can be an informed parent, and let's look at it together. I don't want to be a parent of no, although I will be if I think you're not safe. However, I want you to teach me what this is all about. And one of the things that I'm really in the process of doing, Derek, and I need more money, more resources to do this, but I am creating on my Facebook page, or excuse me, my webpage, the various apps, and then attaching not only about them, which there are several sites like that out there, but I am attaching cases where they have been, where a predator has used that app or that technology to lure in a kid.
Oh.
And I need, quite frankly, more resources. I need donations. I need more time, I need more expertise to finish that, because that's a major project. But no one else right now has that on the internet, and because I look at every human trafficking case in America every day, it would be easy for me to just add that on there. The purpose of that is so a parent can sit with their child and say, okay, this says it's kind of dangerous. Let's look at these 35 cases here and how a predator used it,
yeah,
so that we understand just why it is. Now, it might be that it's okay with you because you would never do these things, but let's make sure we understand it together. But that the number one thing you can do is get involved and open that dialogue. Now, and I would be remiss without closing this without just giving you one hint about shame-based behavior.
Yes.
What happens here is a kid gets involved in this and they start to become violated. Maybe they get lured into sending a naked photo out. By the way, they've intercepted more than 32 million naked photos of teenagers sent by themselves now.
2 million?
And, 32 million, yes. There's technology called photo DNA that scans every email that goes out across the world. And if there is child pornography in it, then it's intercepted and sent back to Washington, D.C.
Wow.
And since they started doing that, they've intercepted 32 million selfies that kids sent of themselves. They've actually intercepted 144 million photos of child pornography. I, for what it's worth, was recently on MSNBC for the Jared Fogle case.
Mm.
And that's one of the ways he was caught, is this technology.
Wow.
But what I want to share with you is that people will send your child a photo. It might be a guy pretending to be a girl. So he sends a picture. And so your son thinks he's talking to a cute little chick. And so he sends a little photo. This guy sends a little photo of this cute little chick naked. And he says, okay, send me one of you. And because your son thinks he's talking to another girl,
mm-hmm,
he'll send it. And then what happens is blackmail begins.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to be ruined. I'm going to show it to your family. I need money. I need more photos. This has gone out to 20,000 people on a child pornography ring, which they often do. And so your son will change his behavior. He'll shut down. He can't sleep. He'll go to school. He can't stay. He comes back. He won't talk to you. He may begin to run away, and quite frankly, he may think of suicide.
Mm.
If it's a daughter, what will happen a lot of times is they will say, I have this photo, and they're trying to force her into becoming a prostitute. And so your daughter usually becomes very emotional. She won't talk. Everything is a big blow-up. She starts to cry. She will go to school, but the key is they'll start to run away, which mm-hmm. is why I run a runaway program out here. But those are key elements to tell you that your child is into some sexually based, shame-based behavior. And you're not expecting to find that, because if you're a girl, you're thinking she's pregnant or on drugs. And you don't know, but you know something's wrong. You don't know what. The most important thing a parent can do at that stage is don't be judgmental. Don't look at them and go, what the heck are you doing?
Mm.
What are you thinking? That just makes you further shame-based. The best thing to do is stop and put your arm around the child and just simply say, I don't know what you're dealing with here, but I know no matter what it is, God is going to forgive you and I'm going to forgive you, and you are not alone. We will get through this together. And if you can't ever remember any more lines than that, remember four words, and that is, I believe in you, because that's what that child is desperate to hear. And that's what has happened, is because they've been lured in by a predator. They've been lured in by somebody else that's telling them everything they want to hear, and now it's gone wrong.
Mm. That is some key information there, Opal. We will need to talk again, I'm sure, because this is key stuff. My wife and I are very tech savvy for our age. You know, I just turned 54. Sharon is a little older. We actually met over the internet. Early adopters.
Wow.
And, yeah. Early adopters in one of those online dating sites. And it actually worked out. The Lord.
Probably less dangerous in those days.
Yeah. Well, she had a couple of experiences she could tell you about off microphone that kind of validate your work. But, you know, thankfully, the Lord knew what he was doing when he brought our paths together. We are coming up on 18 years. And, but that is perhaps the exception to the rule. But we are aware of the problem. And back in the day, we were aware that something like this could be a threat to our daughter. But what you've shared with me over this past 45 minutes is even beyond what I was aware of. And again, from the communication I had with the Internet Crimes Task Force back in Columbia, Jeff City, Missouri, I thought I was fairly well informed, but this is beyond that. Opal Singleton is the president and CEO of MillionKids.org. Her book, Seduced, The Grooming of America's Teenagers. Opal, thank you very much for your time and information today, and we'll have to talk again soon.
Okay, well, thank you, Derek. I appreciate it.
In the show notes, which are at vftb.net, as always, that's View from the Bunker, vftb.net. You'll find links to Opal Middleton's website. The website millionkids.org, also a website for Rapha House, which is the organization that creates vocational programs and offers shelter, rescue for victims of child sex trafficking in Southeast Asia, places like Thailand, Myanmar, Cambodia, also Haiti. Links to those websites, also a link to Opal's book where you can get a copy of Seduced, The Grooming of America's Teenagers by Opal Middleton. I hope this program alarmed and disturbed you. It did me, and I thought I was pretty well informed on this topic, at least more informed than most, just because I had that regular guest on the program back in 2006, 2007, Captain Andy Anderson, who I believe he's moved on since then, but was the guy behind the Mid-Missouri Internet Crimes Task Force 9-10 years ago. But the technology has changed a lot. It's a lot easier for kids to get access to the internet now because there are more places offering Wi-Fi and more devices that can be hidden in a pocket or a purse. In fact, there really weren't any back in 2006, 2007. I don't think I even had a cell phone then. I'd had cell phones previous to that. I sold real estate for a while back in the early 90s and had one of those bag phones. But, boy, that thing must be, by comparison to today's cell phones, that thing was steam-driven. But the access that strangers have to your child, your grandchild, is horrifying. It is terrifying. As I said at the beginning of the program, people that you would not allow to set foot inside your front door may well have access to your child, your grandchild's bedroom. Think about that. And for many of those kids, getting in between them and that screen is going to be a traumatic experience. We went through this kind of with our daughter. Back in the day, this would have been back in the late 90s, early 2000s, so we're talking almost 20 years ago, 15 years ago. There was a website called Neopets, which was an online site where you would create and then care for these, you know, very imaginative, creative cartoon animals. But you would also have an online persona, and you could chat with other members of the game, other players. There really wasn't any point to the game except to, you know, sort of like Farmville. It was like an early version of Farmville, if you want to think about it that way, aimed at kids to create and care for these really cute, colorful cartoon pets. But it dawned on us very early on that not everybody in that game was going to be who they said they were. And the kids playing the game didn't grasp that. They're not at that level of cynicism yet that, people in their 30s and 40s have learned through hard experience. So that was an early kind of wake-up call for us. But again, the means to get to children now. I mean, and she had to do that on a desktop machine. So again, we'd keep the desktop computer where we could all see it, family room, kitchen, whatever. It was in plain sight. It was not in her room. But, over the last 15 years, devices keep getting smaller and smaller. Right now, on this desk in front of me, I've got three internet-connected devices that will fit inside of a pocket. Phone, iPod, tablet. And all of them have apps built for them that will do what Opal was telling us these predators will use, apps that these predators will use to contact and begin grooming vulnerable teens and young adults. And when I use the word vulnerable, that should basically be any teen, any young adult. Because as she pointed out, some of the kids who are being pulled into shame-based behavior are kids who are coming from good homes. It's not that their parents did anything wrong necessarily. The kids were being kids, but because the strangers now have access to them that is way beyond anything that was available to a stranger when I was a kid, they now can get hooks into kids in ways that just weren't possible even 10 years ago, 20 years ago. So this is an important topic. And a hat tip to Bruce Collins for letting me know about Opal Middleton and her work. And when I said that we needed to talk again soon, I mean that literally. Like, I'm going to try to see if we can get Opal Middleton on a plane out here to the Ozarks and get her on Skywatch TV one way or another as soon as we can get schedules to coordinate. Because this is an important topic. And people need to be aware of this. In the interest of getting this program produced and posted quickly, I'm going to just keep commentary on news items to a bare minimum. Just one thing to point out, actually a couple things, just one thing that I thought was really bizarre. And that's a story that broke over Christmas, and I wasn't sure how to process it. I had to do a little digging on it to find out that the story was actually real. There is a movement, apparently, that has been discovered by the counter-terrorist service in Israel, Shin Bet, of ultra-nationalist youth, well, young adults, basically, in Israel. They call themselves Hilltop Youth or Hilltoppers. mainly between the ages of 15 and 24. There are a few hundred, like at the core of this organization. Their numbers may be no more than a few hundred, possibly maybe a couple thousand. But they've got a belief system that, when you look at it, looks very much like a Jewish version of what the Islamic State believes. One young man, age 21, from Jerusalem, has been charged with three murders. It was a July 31st firebombing in a West Bank village. Young couple and an infant, their infant child, killed when the Molotov cocktail was thrown in through the window. Five-year-old boy, also in the home at the time, is, well, he survived, but he's still in the hospital over 6 months later and has a long rehabilitation ahead of him. But the apparent belief of this group is that by killing Palestinians, killing Arabs, they can provoke a war. This war will result in a revolution inside Israel, and with the ultimate goal being the overthrow of the democratic government of the state of Israel, so that it can be replaced with a messianic kingdom. They want to replace it with a government that values the Torah over democracy. And this is kind of counterproductive for us American Christians who tend, for the most part, to view Israel in a very favorable light. Even though Israel, just like the United States and any other human government, has its warts and its flaws and its, you know, corrupt, fallen humans as members of it. But for the most part, I think it's safe to say that the state of Israel has no better friend than American evangelical Christians. So this is a little bit bizarre to see this story coming out where Israel's counterterrorist agency has uncovered a plot by ultranationalist Jews, young people mostly, who want to overthrow their own government so they can replace a democracy with a messianic kingdom. They want to restore the line of David, the kingship of David, and prompt the Messiah to come. Again, when you look at that and look at their goals and their tactics, it's like looking at the flip side of the coin that's got ISIS on the other side. So that was really bizarre. And just a quick comment also on the ongoing standoff in Oregon at the wildlife refuge near Burns, Oregon, prompted by the mistreatment of the Hammond family, ranchers there, at the hands of the United States government. When reading their story, it seems pretty clear to me that agencies of the federal government, Fish and Wildlife in particular, have been trying to provoke the Hammonds into just giving up and selling their property to the federal government for quite a long time, a couple of decades at least. The patriarch of the family and his son, Dwight Hammond, and the son, Stephen Hammond, reported to authorities on Monday of this week, as ordered by a court. They lost a court appeal. The two men had been charged as terrorists, which is ridiculous, apparently for setting a backfire during a wildfire that had broken out. The backfires set, according to the Hammonds, in order to protect their property. And because some of the backfires that they set spread onto government land, caused a minimum of damage, and the ranchers, the Hammonds, put the fire out themselves. But even with that, the federal government chose to prosecute them as terrorists, which carries a minimum sentence of 5 years. So the two men presented themselves to the government, presented themselves to authorities as ordered, and will serve out the rest of their sentence. Last week, Saturday, as you're hearing this, a group of supporters and well-wishers came out to protest the sentence, which is was originally not the sentence. The judge that originally heard the case thought that 5 years was cruel and unusual punishment, but the federal government wasn't satisfied, went back to court in order to force them to serve out the entire 5-year sentence mandated by the minimum sentencing requirement of the conviction, because they were tried as terrorists. But a group of armed militiamen accompanied the protesters. It was a peaceful protest in the town of Burns, Oregon. The militiamen then went and occupied, and you probably have heard the story, occupied the Malheur Wildlife Refuge, about 35 miles south of Burns, and led by sons of Cliven Bundy, the rancher in Nevada who had the armed standoff with the federal government over grazing rights on federal land back in 2014. I agree that the federal government has overstepped its authority, at least as I understand it. I am certainly not an attorney, so bear that in mind. But as I understand the sequence of events, and there's a good post that I'll link to in the show notes at the website conservativetreehouse.com that summarizes all of the events. Very long and lengthy post. Again, these incidents go back almost 25 years. It seems pretty apparent that the government has overstepped its constitutional authority in what has been done to Dwight and Stephen Hammond. But as Christians, looking at Romans 13, verses 1 through 7, 1 Peter 2, verses 13 and 14, which call for Christians to submit to governmental authority, submit to human authority, it seems to me that the Hammonds have done what the Bible calls us Christians to do, which is to submit to authority. Now, that doesn't mean to passively sit back and let the government roll over you. The Hammonds have been fighting this for a long time, and frankly, I wish I'd known about their case a lot earlier and called attention to it a lot earlier. That's on me. I know that there are folks very sympathetic to Ammon Bundy, Ryan Bundy, Mel Bundy, and the group there at the Wildlife Refuge. And by the time you hear this, this standoff may already be over. And I pray that it's over and no shots are fired, that it's all settled peacefully. But as I read the Bible, they have overstepped. Now, the Bundy family is Mormon, and Mormon doctrine holds that the United States Constitution is a divinely inspired document on par with Scripture, on par with the Book of Mormon. So that helps explain their actions. They believe that the federal government has violated a divinely inspired document by overstepping the bounds of constitutional authority. But as Christians, we can't go there. The Constitution is not divinely inspired. It is the greatest foundational document of any government in history, but it does not rise to the level of Scripture. And so I have to say that the Bundys and their supporters have overstepped what we are allowed, scripturally allowed, in the Bible. So, but again, having said that, I'm sympathetic to the plight of the Bundy family and what the government has tried to force them to do, also to the Hammond family. But I think what you compare what the Hammonds have done with what the Bundys have done, the Hammonds have come closest to living out to responding scripturally, biblically, to what has been done to them, and pray that somehow this injustice can be corrected. Coming up on A View from the Bunker, we're going to talk about geopolitics in our next couple of programs. Doug Woodward has a new book coming out, The Next Great War in the Middle East. We'll talk about that and how it fits with the prophetic timeline. And then following that, another new guest to A View from the Bunker, Benjamin Baruch. He's the co-author with J.R. Nyquist of a new book called The New Tactics of Global War. We're certainly entering a period of history where things look awfully dicey. There are a lot of things that could potentially ignite a conflict in the Middle East. Besides the angry words between Turkey and Russia after Turkey shot down that Russian plane back in November, this past week we saw a number of Sunni nations led by Saudi Arabia and quickly followed by Bahrain, Sudan, United Arab Emirates, and now Kuwait, severing diplomatic ties with Iran, which is predominantly Shia Muslim. They've been essentially, the Sunnis and Shias, fighting a proxy war in Iraq and Syria anyway for the last 4 years. And certainly they're doing the same thing in Yemen, which is just south of Saudi Arabia. Things have gotten really tense, especially since the Saudis executed a prominent Shia cleric last week, as Saudi Arabia seeks to hang on to its title as the leading global sponsor of state-sanctioned beheadings. Needless to say, Iran was not pleased. That led to protests all over the Muslim world. But anyway, there are many things that could trigger a wider war in the Middle East. So we'll take a look at these in the next couple of programs. Wednesday, January 13th, the interview with Doug Woodward. On Sunday, the 17th, Benjamin Baruch, The New Tactics of Global War. Our Bible study, the Gilbert House Fellowship, we thought we would be posting our second study of the week on Wednesdays. We're going to be doing a weekly one-hour study, continuing with our path through the Old Testament, chronological order, but we're also going to begin on the New Testament. Well, we thought we could do that on Wednesdays. We're just finding that on a weekday, that's not going to work. So we're probably going to post two studies a week over the weekend instead of one Sunday, one Wednesday. So watch for that at gilberthouse.org. And this coming Tuesday on Skywatch TV, we interview New York Times bestselling author Joel Richardson. We talk about replacement theology, the idea that the church has replaced Israel in God's end times prophecies. That is Tuesday night on the Christian Television Network, 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time, UTC-5. The Christian Television Network is on DirecTV Channel 376, Dish Network Channel 267, or you can watch it on the Christian Television Network's website, ctnonline.com. A View from the Bunker is a production of Gilbert House and released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License. The opening theme is by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. We wrestle not against flesh and blood. I'm Derek Gilbert, and this is A View from the Bunker.